Fate, the oldest and most respected magazine in its field, presents the most respected paranormal interviewer in broadcasting. Here, in a special collector series of conversations with well-known scientists and iconoclasts, is your host, Hilly Rose.
You know, there's a new book out about suicide. And suicide is a topic that, years ago, we didn't talk about cancer. We talked about the big C or whatever. But we just didn't talk about it. And suicide, even today, is something that we just don't talk about very much. And so when I saw this book called Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, Channeled Conversations with the Dead, I thought, I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure that it's right for this show, this audience. And I said, wait a minute. Channeled Conversations with the Dead? Now, wait a minute. Maybe that makes some sense. So I picked up the book and began to read it, and it is one of the most compelling books you ever want to read. And if you think it doesn't involve you, sort of chew on this for a little bit. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death here in the United States. And, of course, amongst adolescents, wow, the suicide rate just grows and grows, and probably because we don't talk about it very much. But it's surely there. And what about suicide bombers? Do we know about that, or do we know about that? I mean, that's in the news just about every day. And then, of course, there was Kevorkian and assisted suicide, and there's all the talk in Oregon about assisted suicide, and, well, we could go on and on and on. But what this book is really about is what happens to the person who commits suicide, or the suicide bomber who commits mass murder. I mean, what happens to them in the afterlife? Well, you think we don't know. Read this book. It is just chock full of scientific information. Scientific information in the afterlife? How do you figure that one? All right, let me tell you who the guest is. The guest is Pamela Ray Heath. She, and this is what's important, I don't normally spend a lot of time on the vita of these people, but she obtained her B.A. in psychology at the University of Missouri in Columbia, summa cum laude. She went on to obtain an M.D. from the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston and became a board-certified anesthesiologist. She went back to school to become a certified master hypnotherapist and obtained a second doctorate degree, this time in parapsychology, from the American School of Professional Psychology and Rosebridge Graduate School of Integrative, I can't even say all this, psychology here in California. Her faculty included a guy by the name of John Klimo, and he is her co-author. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But also you should know that she was co-founder of the Paranormal Research Organization, and she's been involved in numerous cases, including what goes on at the USS Hornet. Wow. I mean, that's quite a background. Pamela, you must be about 97 years old, would you say?
103.
Oh, that's not bad. That's about the temperature in California. It isn't often that we find somebody with that kind of background, a very scientific background and a background in this parapsychology and also in the business of, regressing people and finding out what goes on in previous lives and all that sort of thing. Let's start right out by saying, so we get it out front, why should we believe anything you say about what happens to people who commit suicide? If they commit suicide, unless they missed or something, they're dead. And they may have had a near-death experience, but how do you know what happens to the souls of people who commit suicide? And is that any different than anybody else who dies?
Well, there do seem to be common ground between that and other people who die, but in terms of how we approach this, John and I approach this as trying to find out the answer to the question of what really happens. And we started off looking at about 400 or 500 channeled books and journals, and gathered every bit of information we could find that related to suicide or murder and murder-suicide from that material. And then we tried to cross-corroborate it. Just as if, for example, a cop was going to interview an eyewitness, you'd want to get other accounts and see where you could cross-corroborate the information in order to find the common ground and what is most likely to be true. So we also looked at near-death experiences. We looked at past life hypnotherapy regression sessions. We looked at what people say came to them in dreams. So we gathered every bit of information we could find that supposedly talked about the experiences of suicides in the afterlife. And we put it together and we organized it so that people can sort of read for themselves and make up their own minds what they think happens.
Hmm. All right, so let me understand this. You talk to people who had near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. You talk to people who may have tried to commit suicide but failed for one reason, like jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge but not succeeding.
Yes.
And then the bulk of the book is about you talk to mediums.
Talk to mediums, and also there's a lot more in the written literature of channeled books, mm-hmm, that talks about suicide than people would think.
By the way, one nitty-picky little thing to argue with you about. Everything else in the book, I can't argue because I'm not dead at the moment, so I don't know. But you say that mediumship is at least 2,500 years old. I think it's got to be much, much older than that.
Oh, I'd agree. But we have to talk about recorded.
Oh, recorded mediumship.
Recorded literature.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So it's... We got over that one. Now I can't argue with you anymore. So it's been nice talking to you. Goodbye. Pamela, let's get into this thing. So we're going to talk about all of these things that have occurred. We're going to talk about the suicide bombers. And by the way, are there mediums in Islam? Are there other people who deal in mediumship?
That's a great question, because we looked hard into that. And I'm sure there are mediums in Islam, but they really frown on the paranormal. And I talked to a parapsychologist who lives in Jordan to try to get contact with channeled information, hopefully from suicide bombers. And what he told me is that, first of all, Islam, really frowns upon anything paranormal, and that they don't believe that the dead can pass messages back to the living. So their mediums only transmit information that supposedly come from jinns.
I'm sorry, comes from what?
Jinn, J-I-N-N-S, sort of like, the genie.
Okay. All right, I got you.
So it was very hard. We ended up having to ask mediums over here in the United States to try to channel the suicide bombers, and not many of them wanted to do it, I'll tell you that.
That's interesting. They didn't. It's like the Ouija board. You don't want to play games with it, huh?
Yeah, they just didn't want to deal with these guys. So what the ones that did finally agree to help us out basically started off by dealing with spirit guides and channeling. There are certain specialized spirit guides that deal in suicides and suicide bombers. And they would start by talking to the spirit guides. And then generally, as the comfort level of everybody increased, they'd start channeling directly some of the suicide bombers, too.
Interesting. And something that you say in your book, or that I guess these channelers have said, is that there seem to be fewer messages coming from suicide bombers because, and I guess this is the reason, because they're happy with what they've done, whereas most suicides are people who are unhappy with their situation here on Earth.
You mean to say there's fewer regrets mentioned from them, not fewer messages?
Oh, fewer, that's true. Fewer,
yeah, regrets. I don't think they really are at all happy with where they are now or what they're experiencing.
You mean they don't get, what is it, 27 virgins or something?
No, they don't get the 70 virgins.
I've always wondered what they do with these 70 virgins or however many there are. But you're saying that that's not what occurs.
No, that's not. And it's really funny because when you talk to them in the afterlife, it's very clear that they didn't get what they expected. And yet they don't want to admit that they were wrong. They don't want to admit that anybody lied to them to coerce them into doing this. Hmm. And all they'll say is, you know, it wasn't what we expected.
Wow.
Literally, that's all they'll admit to.
Hmm. All right, these mediums or channelers that you have used in the main are here in the United States then. Is that what you're saying?
Certainly for the suicide bomber material, mm-hmm. yes. For the general traditional suicide information, I found books from mediums that were in Holland, England, various parts of the world.
Okay.
China, Japan.
And I'm not going to spend a lot of time at right at the beginning about suicide bombers. I want to get directly into other suicides. But you say here in your book that there are six suicides listed in the Old Testament, and certainly most people know about Masada in Israel, where these people killed themselves rather than become Roman slaves. Mm-hmm. And more recently, there's the Jonestown people, temple in Guyana, 913 souls all committed suicide. I don't know whether that's voluntary or not. I really never quite figured that one out. But nonetheless, the statistics of Americans in suicides is terrible.
And it's getting worse every year.
I'm just looking up quickly as I'm talking here what those statistics are in your book. It says the current statistics on suicide, approximately 5 to 15% of American adults admit to having had suicidal thoughts at some point in their life, and up to 50% of high school students have considered it. Wow.
Yeah.
That's frightening.
And it's not just our country either. From what I can see on the Internet, looking at the World Health Organization statistics, every country is seeing a huge increase in suicide. Nobody is exempt from this. You know, China, a minimum of 287,000 deaths a year admitted to suicide. And most people feel a great many more deaths are due to suicide, and they're just hiding it.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that statistic. I was in China last year, and even today with the modern society of Shanghai and Beijing, in the hinterlands, the people still are living in terrible, terrible conditions. And, you know, they just feel desolate. They feel there's no way out for them. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they commit suicide. So I don't doubt at all those statistics. Okay, so we've got a subject here that, as I said in the opening, we just don't talk. It's not polite to talk about it. And if somebody's child happens to commit suicide, well, we sort of cover it over. We don't get involved in it. But then we have something like the, I'm trying to remember the name of the school in Colorado where there was
Columbine,
yeah. Now, here was a case of suicide and mass murder together.
Mm-hmm.
Is that unusual?
No, and it's getting more and more common. And if the spirit guides are correct, there's a certain infectious quality to thought that means we'll continue to see it increase.
Hmm. Okay. There is so much in your book that I want to talk to you about, but let's get into this business of what basically happens when a person commits suicide. Based on the various channelers that you have talked to, and do all the channelers agree? I mean, can we sort of move forward saying there's some kind of agreement, or is there a lot of disagreement on what happens?
I would say there's some variation, and you have to understand one of the problems you get into with channeled material that we do talk about in the book is that you're going to get a certain amount of bias introduced by the medium, especially if they have strong cultural values that sort of color and distort the information that they might be given. So we sort of will look at the variations on the theme and try to point out when it looks like this might be cultural bias or medium's bias and when it looks like a common ground issue that no matter whether it was the 1700s or last year, the mediums say the same thing. And most mediums, you know, they agree there is an afterlife, first of all, and that there's a lot of confusion for the spirit initially. And the people who I think have the worst trouble with this are those who don't believe there is an afterlife, the skeptics, in other words.
Hmm. They don't know where they are, and they don't believe they're dead.
That's right. They may try to keep trying to kill themselves over and over and over again.
Wait, let me understand that. Once they have killed themselves,
yes,
and they're in the afterlife, they continue to want to kill themselves?
Yeah, they don't realize they're dead because they still have consciousness, and they're so convinced there's no afterlife, in their mind they can't be dead, so they keep trying to do it.
Yeah, well, see, there are a lot of strange contradictions in your book, not your contradictions.
Yeah.
It's just in my mind in reading it, and that's one of them. You say that in almost every case there are spirit guides that meet the people who commit suicide.
Right.
Well, then how can they be lost? How can they be confused about whether they're dead or not?
Well, there may be two factors involved. One is that we create our own realities on all level of existence. And this is even more true in the afterlife initially. The dead don't have any eyes. All you have is your mind's perception. And what you can perceive is limited by what you expect to see. So if you're convinced that you're alive, you may be blind to anybody who's dead who's trying to reach out to help you, which is why some of the older mediums talked about the importance of rescue circles, because these people can still be aware of the living, but they're oblivious to those who are with them in spirit.
Okay. I'm
sounds confusing, huh?
Well, no, I'm beginning to understand. I didn't understand this business of not having any eyes.
Well, think about it. You've lost the body. You have no body. You have no ears. You have no eyes. All you have is your mind. You have consciousness. So you have to use that consciousness to perceive what's around you.
But it would seem to me that if you have spirit guides, mm-hmm. that however they communicate, mm-hmm. they're going to say, "Hey, Charlie, you just committed suicide. I'm here to help you."
That's right, and they can ignore that. You know, this happens even with us who are living. You know, somebody comes up and says, "Can I help you?" And you're so focused on something else, you don't notice them, you don't hear them. It's the same kind of problem, only intensified, made worse 1,000 times.
Okay, so once they're in contact, let's say. We've gone through those people who are sort of wandering. But at some point, their spirit guides are going to make contact, I would think.
Yes, they try.
Okay. What happens then? Do they...
They try to help them make their transition. And they may offer them a chance to go to their own funerals. They will also help them work through their life review and their self-judgment. Everybody, and it doesn't matter how you die, goes through a period of a life review and self-judgment phase. And this is, again, one of the most common themes, I think, in all the channel literature, whether you're talking the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Islamic Book of the Dead, Tibetan Book of the Dead. They all talk about a certain life review and judgment. I think the Egyptians felt like it was, you know, judgment by the gods, but most people talk about it as a self-judgment. You judge yourself, and you judge your own actions.
Okay, so if we can accept that there are certain levels that we have to go through, and there is time we serve here on Earth, and if we can't face up to our problems, so we commit suicide, are we then condemned to come back to Earth another time, reincarnated, and have to solve those or face those problems again?
Well, some mediums believed in reincarnation and some didn't. So there's disagreement in the, you know, in the book in terms of what people say happens. The modern mediums certainly all feel that reincarnation does occur. And in fact, we did look at reincarnation statistics from the University of Virginia, and there is a pretty high incidence of people who had committed suicide in past lives being prone to doing it again. So, likely, yeah.
All right, so therefore, you don't solve anything by committing suicide. It's not a good idea.
Correct. You're going to have to repeat that grade again if you fail it.
So, in terms of spiritual growth, we're talking about here, you don't. you may temporarily not have to face up to it, but other people do. And so I would assume that there's a certain amount of guilt that you have. Or, I don't know, does guilt pervade into the other world?
Oh, yeah. All the feelings last. I mean, just because they die also doesn't mean they stop caring about those who are left behind. And they are very aware of how we feel about them,
mm-hmm.
what we're thinking about them. That gets communicated to them, and it can affect them in very powerful ways. So actually one of the things that we can do to help the dead move forward spiritually is to let go of any grief or guilt or anger we have ourselves about what they did.
In other words, forgive them.
Yes, and forgive ourselves, because we all, you know, there's this human tendency to blame ourselves for not seeing it coming, for not stopping it, for not doing more. It goes on and on and on.
Well, people who commit suicide clearly have damaged self-esteem in most cases. What I don't fully understand, according to what's in your book, the people who commit suicide, maybe I should put it another way, everybody says it's not a good idea.
Yeah.
Because it's negative. And you may have to live it again, and there's all these consequences. But you quote in your book, there was a study done on jumpers from the Golden Gate Bridge who survived.
Mm-hmm.
And according to you, or according to the study, they all have new positive attitudes. Now,
it's not universal. When you look at the near-death experiences of people who nearly died by suicide, some of them do keep trying to kill themselves because they want to get back to the afterlife. There's quite a difference in that respect to those who succeed at suicide versus those who have failed at suicide. And in fact, that's part of the whole purpose of doing a book on the channeled messages of people who succeeded. Because other people can say to me, well, you haven't committed suicide. You don't know what it's like. You can't tell me, you know, that life won't be better if I do this. And all I can say is, you're right, I can't tell you this, but these are people who were in your shoes. These were people who did what you say you want to do, and this is what they say. They say, don't do it. It's a mistake. It doesn't solve any problems. It only makes things worse. And then you got to, you know, face the same problems over again in another life. Don't do it. But you see, that huge difference is that point when they realize they have lost the body and they cannot get back again. Near-death experiencers do not have that moment because they come back to their bodies. The dead, the truly dead, realize at some point that they have lost their body and they have no choice. They have committed a final act. It's done. And they can't go back and fix things.
Yet they perhaps can be reincarnated.
Yeah.
And hopefully face these problems and solve them while they're here.
Yeah, but the problem seems to be when they have to face them again, they tend to face them in tougher situations.
Oh, it gets more difficult.
Easier situations. They face things, yes, in a more difficult way.
Okay, so this whole business of karma comes in, and you have to work off a certain amount of karma.
There's argument about karma.
An argument?
Yeah. Some spirits don't believe that karma exists or that it's more a matter of just choice. When you look at how you hurt somebody or you look at what you'd promised you were going to do for other people and then you reneged, you feel like you have to make that up for them. And it's not really a law of karma. It's more just when you have felt their pain and you have realized what you did, you want to make recompense.
Okay. It is said then basically that committing suicide is not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
What about the people who are in terrible pain, misery, we know they're terminal, and they commit suicide. Are they treated any differently?
Yes. And that, to me, was actually kind of one of the surprises of the research, was that assisted suicide really is quite a different situation from either traditional suicide or suicide murder, such as suicide bombers. The assisted suicides had very few regrets from the afterlife. They generally had very easy transitions. It wasn't a case of them having to repeat anything over with, repeat any lessons over with. However, they would caution people not to lightly take their own lives, even in cases of assisted suicide. They do suggest that this be a very thoughtful, careful decision, that you make sure that everybody around you is comfortable with what you're going to do and is in agreement with it. And there were a few spirits who said that they did regret taking their own lives, even though they were terminal, because they had lost a little something that they were meant to gain out of allowing somebody else to care for them or out of the suffering that they had intended to learn some kind of lesson through that they cut short.
You know, I realize you can't, in writing a book, read every single thing that's ever been written on a subject, but I was a little surprised that you didn't quote Edgar Casey on this, because Edgar Casey said basically suicide is not acceptable, excepting in terms of, the terminally ill who have in great pain, and then it was okay. So he, many years ago in his channeling, if I guess that's what he was doing, mm-hmm. Came up with the same thing. But you didn't mention it in your book at all that I found. Was there some reason why?
No, I think it was just a matter of
you couldn't
include every single thing. I mean, it was interesting. I found some other books after we finished writing this one that I would have liked to have included. But we had to stop at some point. In fact, that the publishers wanted it to be 100 pages shorter than it already was. So we just kind of had to do a cutoff at some point.
Hmm. I want to go back now to, if I can. Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about regrets. Do people who commit suicide generally have regrets?
Traditional suicides generally have lots of regrets. And that's one of the big messages they like to get across. In fact, there's a whole chapter that we devoted in the book of messages from suicides mm-hmm. to those who want to kill themselves. And a lot of that is about, regretting that they would regret this act if they do it, that it's not a solution. It only makes things worse. You hurt people around you. You have no idea how much it's going to hurt the people around you until you've done it. And it's very painful for them to have to experience that.
So it's the pain they're causing others that causes the regrets.
That's a lot of it. Some of them regret, not having finished things that they could have worked on. There's many, many different kinds of regrets, all kinds of sections, but it's just sort of overwhelming the number of, in at least the traditional suicides, the number of messages that are just about regret.
Hmm. What about the people like Kevorkian mm-hmm. who assist other people when they go pass on?
Mm-hmm.
Are they treated any differently?
That was a surprise to me. Apparently, they aren't. It's not really considered murder to assist somebody to commit suicide who has made this very thoughtful, careful decision. Now, I have my own doubts on Kevorkian, if you're going to talk about him specifically, as to whether all of the people he helped really wanted to go through with it. There were stories of a few people who had changed their mind at the last minute, and he did it anyway. That would be a case of murder. Okay?
Yeah, I understand.
But in cases here, there were actually some assisted suicides who came back to talk to those who had helped them die, specifically to reassure them that they had done the right thing, and it was going to be okay.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, let's get to something that I'm surprised there is so much in your book concerning suicide bombers. And suicide bombers, of course, are getting to be bigger and bigger. There's going to be more and more of them. And they take their lives, and they take the lives of innocent people. Mm-hmm. Now, it's something, I suppose, that isn't brand new in the world, but certainly in the amount of suicide bombers, it's got to be new in the world. It's only in the last 30, 40 years, maybe. And as you've done quite a study of Islam in here, and you point out that Islam does not provide for this. So
no.
how in the world can you account for the increasing number? I mean, look at what was purportedly going to happen last August when they were going to blow all these planes out of the sky. You're talking about maybe 2,500, 3,000 people were going to be killed along with the bombers.
Yes, and involving women, too.
Women, children, all kinds of innocents.
Yeah.
But most people are innocents anyway. People who walk into a cafe and blow up, whether it's in Israel or whether it's in Bali or whether, anywhere in the world.
Right, but using women suicide bombers as part of the group.
Oh, I see what you're saying. But that's becoming more frequent, too.
Yes.
In the Palestine area, they pay people's families reparation, but more and more women are becoming suicide bombers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea or clue to what that's all about? Well, I don't think you cover that in your book. I just wondered if you had an opinion.
We try to address that a little bit, and part of it has to do with a growing sense that they have no choice. They're disenfranchised, and this is, they believe falsely, this is the only way they can get things to change. And so there's a certain amount of desperation to it. In the case of, it was interesting, two of the spirits that came through to talk to us were the women Chechen bombers who took down the Russian planes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very surprising at the time when it happened, because it was only about 4 months after the original event that they came through. And in one case, she'd been somewhat coerced into it. It wasn't 100% choice. In the other case, the woman had sort of been brainwashed, shall we say, by the people around her into thinking that this would give her power, this would give her respect, this would put her on an equal footing with the men, and she wanted that.
So that's what you feel, equality is what they're looking for. And retribution.
Well, no, I think it's more than that. I think it's a matter of they're disenfranchised. They don't feel they have a choice. They're feeling very othered. One of the surprises to me about the book is that suicide bombers are really a lot more like traditional suicides than you would think. The only exception to that is they don't express a lot of regrets, but they also seem to have a much, much slower course in the afterlife than any other kind of suicide, because they have to deal with the consequences of their act. They have to deal with everybody who they hurt and everybody who knew somebody they'd hurt. So they have a heck of a life review to go through.
Yeah, but it seems to me that when they realize their families are going to be taken care of, they get compensation, that in some cases they're doing that as a very positive thing for their families.
Yeah, but you don't really get that feeling. You know, it's interesting. For example, one of the suicide bombers refused to go to his own funeral, and it turned out he was embarrassed. He was embarrassed about the whole thing. He was embarrassed about some deception that was involved in this. And it's just sort of interesting that they don't really come across as proud. Some of them are still defiant. They're certainly still argumentative.
I would think so. Well, you say, this is what I don't understand, and you spend a lot of time in your book on it, so help me. You're talking here about al-Zawahir. You're talking about bin Laden and their followers.
Yeah.
Dream of a caliphate, which is a kind of political institution headed by a caliph who is political leader of the world's Muslims and head of their state. However, the Prophet Muhammad only saw such a caliphate lasting for 30 years, and nowhere among the injunctions of Islam is there a requirement to create an Islamic superstate. It's just another attempt to reduce Islam to political ideology. Now, we talked about those promises earlier on. I'm wondering, those promises of the virgins and the afterlife, is that some kind of propaganda that we in the Western world talk about? Or is that truly what is being told to these suicide bombers in face of the fact that that's not what it's all about?
Well, apparently a lot of them are being told that. They're being told that. They're also being told, we'll take care of your families. So it's sort of a multi-pronged attack. They're being told, you don't have any choice. There's no other way to change things, number one. You know, there's no other out. Everybody's against us. This is your only way of making a statement. This is your only way to change things for the better. They're told, you know, this will give you glory in paradise. You'll get the virgins. You'll be on the right-hand side of God. You're told, you know, multiple things. You know, we'll take care of your family. They'll get $25,000. They'll have health insurance, you know, for life. And they're also told, you will be glorified. We will put your name up in posters, and everybody will admire you. So they're sort of hitting all the bases here.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that true Islam does not provide that.
No, true Islam is very anti-suicide. However, what they do is they play word games. They say, this isn't suicide. This is jihad. And because it's jihad, that makes it okay. But in essence, they're playing word games. And I think they know it, too, because some of the people who went to interview the suicide bombers were told they were not allowed to use the word suicide. They always had to refer to it by certain specific terms that made it sound okay. But the Islamic scholars will all tell you, you know, this is not in traditional Islam.
And yet they sell it, and in increasing numbers, too. You mentioned the more women in the Chechen movement involved, but the Chechens are not Islamists, are they? It's different from Islam.
Yeah, they're not part of Al Qaeda.
Well, now they're not part of Al Qaeda.
You've got the Tamil Tigers, who are again separate. So there's all kinds of groups that have used suicide bombing that aren't necessarily Islam. We just are used to talking about it with Islam because there's so much in the news right now.
You point out in your book that Muhammad Atta, who led the attack on 9/11, comes from a well-educated, middle-class family, and that many of these suicide bombers also. So that doesn't sound like they have no choice. I can understand the poor Palestinians. But this is something different. This is somebody from Saudi Arabia. In fact, almost all those bombers were from Saudi Arabia, and almost all of them came from well-to-do families.
Mm-hmm.
So what prompts them, this jihad?
Again, I think it's a complex thing, just as traditional suicide is complex. There's not any one cause that can tip somebody over the edge. But we all know, you know, people who just done it, whether they be successful actors who seem at the pinnacle of their career who suddenly commit suicide or others, there are complex things that go into the equation that make that decision.
All right, let's go to the afterlife. You say that all suicide bombers go through a life review.
I'd say all souls go through a life review.
Okay, everybody does.
Yeah, not just suicide bombers.
All right. All souls do, but they do as well. So in this life review, is there a possibility they could turn around, that they could be reincarnated in a somewhat different frame of mind? As you point out, some of them come back to confront because they're in the afterlife, but it's voluntary for them to comfort their victims.
Or to at least talk to their victims, yes. It's voluntary on both sides, and that was sort of an interesting point. Both the suicide bomber and their victim have to want to meet for the meeting to occur. And even then, it's sort of carefully watched over by the spirit guides to make sure it goes well. And in some cases, at least in one case in this book, a suicide bomber was planning to reincarnate at the same time as one of his victims. And he was going to be her brother and help her raise her children as a method of payback.
Hmm. Well, these terrorists, and I don't want to spend any more time on them, but I mentioned karma a moment ago, and you sort of said, well, there's some argument about karma.
Yeah.
Can we go back over that territory? I'm not sure. Because there are so many people who believe that everybody has karma. And are you suggesting that there are those who believe they do not?
There were some channeled spirits, and I think Michael was one of them. There were more than one that said karma isn't exactly what we think. It's not like some law, some requirement, you know, from above, some operating property of the universe. It's more a case of when you have done your life review and self-judgment and you've walked in the shoes of the person you harmed and you've realized what you've done, the enormity of it, you genuinely want to make recompense. But it is a matter of choice how you do that and what you do. And it may be something you discuss with your victim of, how can I make this up to you? But it's not being imposed by an external force so much. One thing that is sort of imposed, though, I will add, because some suicide bombers really don't want to do their life reviews, is that you do have to do a thorough life review, and not necessarily just one time. Sometimes you'll do it over and over and over again until you really understand what your actions' effect was.
Hmm. All right. You have a section in your book called The Solution to Terrorism.
Yeah.
And it starts out saying, occasionally in the interviews conducted for this book, guides would discuss what the spirit realm's view is on how terrorism could be ended.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is to work on our own enlightenment.
Yes.
I'm not planning to commit suicide. What's my enlightenment got to do with it?
This has to do with the fact that they said thought is contagious. And when you make a change, it helps everybody around you to make a change for the better. So if we can all of us look at our own issues, our own thought patterns, and let go of false perceptions and thought patterns that are limiting and maybe not correct, then it has a ripple effect, most powerfully on the people who we come into contact with in our daily life, but it can also have an effect with everybody on the planet.
So we're all in touch with each other in that
sense.
We're
all interconnected.
Okay. Another part of it is heartfelt prayer. I think that word heartfelt is interesting. What does that mean?
It means prayer that you really care about, you put yourself into. It doesn't just mean, you know, by rote, you know, just saying something by rote because you feel you ought to, but you don't really care. It's really wanting things to get better. And from what the spirit realm is saying, there is a lot of prayer right now, and it is making a difference. It is helping.
All right, there's so much in this book, and I just can't go into all of it. But getting away from suicide bombers, even though you spent, goodness, I don't know, about a quarter of this book, I think, on the subject, why did you feel it was important to present so much material on this very small group of people?
Well, I guess my fear is that it's not a small group of people. It's a growing group of people, because it's not just the suicide bombers. It's the Columbine killers. It's these people who go on shooting rampages in the post office. We're seeing more and more mass murder suicide. It's just becoming a hugely growing problem, and it's something our society needs to understand so it can deal with it. To some extent with assisted suicide, it's something our society needs to look at. We need to consider, at least parapsychology can offer them a different perspective, perhaps, on what the ramifications are of assisted suicide, so that we can make better informed decisions.
Well, do you think that that's going to happen? I mean, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that many years ago, people would not talk about cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it's, you know, wide open. It's on the news. Everybody talks about it. It isn't a secret. But suicide is. And are there organizations, societies that are trying to do something about bringing this to the forefront so that, because suicide is, I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but you're a doctor. Is suicide basically a treatable condition? If we know that somebody is suicidal in their thoughts, is that a treatable condition?
I think it can be influenced, is the way I'll put it. There are some people who are so determined on suicide, I don't think anyone can stop them. But I do think we can influence them. We are all interconnected. And one of the reasons a lot of people commit suicide is they feel isolated. They feel disenfranchised. They feel like they're not a part of things. Even if they are a part of things, they don't feel like they are. And if people are a little bit more aware of that, they can reach out to them. But I also wrote this for the survivors of suicides, because a lot of them hold on to their grief and their pain for far too long. And I think they almost think in some obscure way it helps for them to suffer. And it really doesn't help either the living or the dead for either side to hold on to that grief and that guilt and that pain. Each one feels what the other one is going through to some extent. Certainly the dead feel what the living are going through.
Well, what I was getting at is, if the statistics are accurate, that 50% of our young people in high school
are thinking about it.
Are thinking about suicide.
Yeah.
Wow, I mean, that's
very contagious.
Yeah, I mean, so that gets back to my earlier question, which you didn't answer, and is, are there, you know, is there like the Cancer Society? Is there a Suicide Society? That sort of thing?
There's all kinds of societies out there, from what I can tell. I mean, we have the United States Suicide Prevention Week. We have World Suicide Prevention Day. There are groups for survivors of suicides. I don't think there's a single group out there, but you see more and more suicide walks. You see more and more meetings about suicide. You can do a quick internet search and pull up a number of things very quickly, very easily.
I understand that the September is Suicide Month. Is that right?
Suicide Prevention Week is, I believe, the 17th through the 23rd.
Ah, I see.
In the United States, and World Suicide Prevention Day is September 10th.
Mm-hmm. So those are attempts to focus on it, to get public attention.
Raise awareness, yeah.
I mean, we talk about cancer or diabetes or these other diseases, and yet here is something that is rampant, and we don't even talk about it.
It's still very taboo.
Yeah. Do you think that we would live different lives if we knew that we survived death?
I think we do. I would. I say do because I believe in the afterlife, and I know it affects how I live my life. I think it would affect people because I think they would live things, their lives in a more caring way and be more aware of what effect their actions are going to have on others. I really think it would make us much more mindful.
I don't know how to put this. So
okay.
isn't that what a lot of religions are about? That we need to live our lives, I think it's in the Catholic religion, the Jewish religion, that...
Well, you get into this problem of, are you dealing with religion, are you just dealing with rules, or are you dealing with spirituality? I think I prefer to talk about it as spirituality, because that cuts across all religions. All religions have elements of spirituality. Most of them have a certain amount of... shall we say, rules and regulations,
mm-hmm.
which are not necessarily related to spirituality. But yes, I think spirituality is about being more aware of our interconnectedness, perhaps being less judgmental of others is a big message in this book. Certainly the spirit guides are not judgmental. If anything, they try to discourage us from being so judgmental on ourselves and others. I really think if we take the time to listen to the quiet moments, and it doesn't need to be in prayer or meditation, just to listen to our own selves in quiet, silence our thoughts, and allow our own souls to come through, that all of us would be the better for it.
All right. Well, Dr. Heath, I think you've answered this question, but I'd like to go over it one more time.
Sure.
You have spent so much effort in this whole business of suicide. What do you come away from it with? In other words, what is the bottom line purpose of this book? I know it's partly to publicize suicide, bring it to people's consciousness, but this business of going to mediums and having mediums tell you what they think they are getting from the other side. I mean, do you really, as a scientist, believe there's any validity to that?
I think there is when you cross-corroborate it with other information. And when you look at 300 or so years of data from different countries around the world, and you find the common ground where everybody is saying the same thing, you start to put more credence on that. And you say, okay, everybody is saying this, no matter what their culture, no matter what their era. Maybe this is something that really happens. And you look at other things and you say, okay, well, this one says this and this one says that. We'll include both, but we'll point out that you don't know which is really the case. These are just what different people say. So we approached it just like you would approach an eyewitness account, in the sense of trying to find cross-corroborating data. And in terms of what I personally got out of this, or what I want people to get out of this, more important than what I got out of it, is I'm a doctor. I believe in informed consent. If somebody wants to commit suicide, I want them to know what they're getting into, okay? It's still their choice whether they commit suicide. If they commit suicide, at least they'll know what they're getting into, and they may have a better chance of handling it well. For those who have survived other people getting committing suicide, I want them to have some comfort. I want them to understand these people do not burn in hell forever. I want them to understand that they're still loved, they're still cared about, their thoughts, their feelings still matter. And there are things they can do to help loved ones who have passed on into the afterlife. And some of this information is true regardless of whether the person committed suicide. So it does sort of generalize to the afterlife in general.
All right, the book is Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, by Pamela Ray Heath and John Pennell.
Bait, the oldest and most respected magazine in its field, has brought you another in this series of Collector's Conversations with your host, Hilly Rose.